Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, rodeo fans of Making Eight Maniacs. This is pro rodeo announcer Brett Weldon, inviting you to step back on the ranch with Making Eight. So get a grip, because the show starts now.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Put your hands together for this next cowboy. He has written his last seven rules and tonight he's going to try and make it eight.
Here comes the boom sound.
Good afternoon, rodeo fans. That's right. It is time once again to sit back on the ranch with Making Eight Rodeo Network as we are bringing you coverage of rodeos and bull ridings that are going on coast to coast and across the border, even in Canada. And man, I got to say, this weekend has been a wild one. Now, Calgary Stampede just wrapped up, and man, what an exciting weekend it was. If you missed it and did not watch the live streaming of it, you missed out. Cannot wait to get up to Calgary to actually see this event firsthand, as this has got to be one of the most exciting rodeos going on, especially during the summer months. Now, they just wrapped up Cowboy Christmas. Is, you know, sort of winding down a little bit now. The rodeos are kind of stretching a little bit further apart, but there are so many going on, and we've got a lot of them coming up this weekend. Cheyenne Frontier Days, the daddy of them all, kicks off this weekend. So you guys will not want to miss out on the action that's going on up there. Not to mention, during the daddy of them all, the CBR is having their two-day finals going on up there. So lots of activity going on in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Lots of rodeos going on in the PRCA world. There are so many rodeos going on this summer. Man, you can't beat it. You got to get out to and see some of these and watch these contestants as they make these runs for the world championship there in December at the Wrangler National Finals and, of course, at the CBR Finals there in Cheyenne this weekend. But, you know, with all the other rodeos that are going on out there, we're so stretched so thin, it is so hard for us to get out and cover them, that we've got so many supporters here on the Making Eight Rodeo Network that we figured, well, the best way to do it is to check in with some of them from time to time and just see how things are going in some of the other rodeos that we cannot make it out to. One of those being our great friend, Mr. Brett Weldon. We're going to bring him on the line right now and find out just where he is at. Brett,
what's going on, brother?
Oh, man. How are the rodeos going in your neck of the woods, my friend?
I lost you for a second. Say that again.
I said, how are the rodeos going in your neck of the woods?
Hey, Doobie and I are up in Washington, Iowa. We just stopped by. We were in Tipton, Iowa last night. We're coming to Washington. They got a show here tomorrow, which is with the same crew that we're working with. He's just double booked that night. We're going over to Centerville. Once Scooby gets his hitch fixed, we had a little issue. There's been some crazy stuff this week in probably one that we need to talk about on a serious note just to get some information out there. And I don't know if I've talked to you since. At Tipton, when we showed up, as standard for most rodeos, stock contractor shows up, the fair board or wherever you're at, generally in the contract that they provide, feed, hay, and water, which, you know, happens everywhere. Well,
that's right.
Unfortunately, it didn't happen at Tipton, where the water truck, this happened to be the same truck that's used to water the track, the racetrack there. It had some calcium sulfate, I think is what it is, the ingredient they put in the water. Keep the dust down. Now, keep in mind, I've been to this venue seven times, and they've done it the exact same way all seven times. Well, this time, apparently there was just enough of that sulfium phosphate or calcium phosphate, whatever that stuff is, a bad chemical toxin that was in the water, and we had some bulls get poisoned this week. Now, I bring this up,
man,
because it happens. As long as I can remember, that's happened all over the country, and people just need to be aware of it and, you know, maybe come up with alternate sources of water. You know, the Fair Board up there, they you know, they're great about taking responsibility for it. And it's just an unfortunate incident. And, you know, with the animal rights people the way they are that don't understand the way we care for our bulls, brother, we actually lost two members of our family this week. And it was a very painful thing to sit back and watch.
Yeah, Brett, that's a really tragic thing. And I'm glad that you actually brought that up, man, because it really is, you know. And even as spectators to observe what's going on out there, like at these arenas, you know, if you see something, point it out to one of the stock hands. You know, I mean, that's so important, is to bring awareness to what's going on, because sometimes, you know, some of those things may get overlooked. And that's a tragic thing for not only the stock contractor, but the rodeo community that were there. And to see, you know, animals go down like that is, it's a hard thing. And I know a stock contractor, sure enough, lost a couple members of his family. That's a rough deal, man. That really is. But, I know the rodeo actually went off pretty well up there. Am I correct?
Yeah, it turned out pretty good. We and Gooby just joined me here, by the way. He took a break. He's all greased up from working on his hitch from his 80-foot trailer with the 2-gallon water tank.
It went well, man.
These deals up here, they are sanctioned Zebra. The deal tomorrow we got is a URA rodeo and then a Zebra bull riding and a WPRA barrel racing at the same venue. They're good, man. The people in Iowa, this is one of my favorite places to come. I usually call it my second home, you know. So
I know you do. I know you do it. Every time I talk to you, you're either doing something with the law enforcement or something in Tulsa, or you're up there in Iowa, man. We can't figure it out. So it's either Tulsa or Iowa, or you're home away from home.
Oklahoma gets tired of them, Scott, and sends them up here to Iowa.
Is that what it is? Well, hey, you know, it could be worse. They, you know, well, of course, then again, I could see where Arkansas might need to have some of those upstanding citizens like Brett Weldon there.
Hey, next week I change gears, brother, and I head to one of my very favorite venues, the 78th Durango Fiesta Days in Durango, Colorado. Hey.
Yes, sir.
I know Cheyenne's happening, but if anybody's in the Durango area, that's the place to be, I guarantee it. Great, great, great venue and great people there.
You bet, you bet. Well, I know it's a great turnout up there, and well, we look forward to hearing about Durango this year. I know it's going to be a fantastic one. So we look forward to checking in with you guys. Now, how's the road trips been going?
You know, we've been kind of tame this time. Chasey, for the first time in years, wasn't able to make this run with me, so we got Garrett. You know, he's almost 13, and he's in training. He's been running sound for me, which has been kind of stressful, but he's been doing a good job. And Gooby has a Colt Fornash with him. He's a 15-year-old bull rider from up northeastern Oklahoma, and he's won about $2,000 this week, and he's 15 years old. So we got young cowboys in training. And, you know, Gooby and I will tell you that age and treachery will always overcome youth and skill. But I think since the kids aren't around, we'll tell you, we're just about scared to play too many pranks on them because, you know, they may have a few tricks up their sleeve and maybe just a little bit faster than we are.
Is that right? Well, you know, I've got to say, Brett, you know, for you guys to be carrying out those young guns, man, and actually teaching Garrett with the sound and all that has been fantastic, my friend. But, you know, one thing that we have been able to catch wind of is that we know that, you know, as much as you guys travel up and down the road, what kind of music you guys like to listen to. And, Brett, I've been in the truck with you, my friend, so I know what kind of tunes really get you going and get you fired up. And obviously you've been training Garrett along those same lines to be able to play that entertaining music that you enjoy so much. And we just happened to catch a clip of it, man, so we're going to throw it out here for you. How's this sound?
Hey,
we know you are the biggest. We know that you are the biggest Justin Bieber fan out there, my friend, and so glad that that they have filled your box with such great music like that. And of course, that came right off of your audio clip. So I mean, we couldn't help but air it out there for you, my friend.
I don't want to call you out on the air, but that's the wrong truck. That's Gooby's truck.
Oh.
It's Miley Cyrus in my truck.
Oh, is that right? Well, I'm glad that you guys have really had a great time out there, Brett, and we really look forward to catching up with you again, man. Make sure you guys keep us up to date. Keep those Facebook posts coming so we know what's going on with you guys out there on the road. And, man, I'm telling you, Gooby has had the worst luck with that trailer since he got the thing. Man, he's going to have to trade it in and start hiring the Make an 8 bus to go take to haul around, isn't he?
Hey, speaking of which, Scott, I tell you what, I found something in my truck that was attached to my trailer. I need to get that sent back to you. I think it belongs to you, and so that'll be in the mail in a few days.
Well, I'll tell you what, my friend, you just hang on to it, and I'm sure we'll cross paths down the road here real soon, Gooby.
Yes, sir. It's all yours. I'll hang on to it for you.
Well, listen, you guys drive safe, and we're gonna let you guys run. But man, we appreciate you guys checking in with us, and sorry to hear what went on up there at Tipton, Iowa. But we know the road goes on, and I know you guys are looking forward to some more rodeo events.
You betcha, brother. We'll be looking for you down the road.
All right, Brett. We'll catch up with you guys soon.
Alrighty, man. Adios.
All right, y'all. That was Brett Weldon and Gooby. Two of the guys that really represent Making A Rodeo Network, and we are proud to have them out there on the road with us and checking in with us here from time to time here on the Back on the Ranch. We're going to take a short break here, fans. When we come back, we've got a special guest that you guys are not going to want to miss his story, so make sure you stay tuned right here to the Back on the Ranch show on Making A Rodeo Network.
Hey, this is Casey Donahue, and you are listening to the Making A Rodeo Network, your home for complete rodeo coverage.
Catch all the rodeo action with Scott Masick and Make an 8 Rodeo Network.
Give me 10 bulls and I'll cover all 10. I'm the best that there's ever been.
I sleep in my truck and I drive through the rain. Getting down hard, that's why I came.
Catch all the rodeo action with Scott Masick and Make an 8 Rodeo Network. The best in Texas red dirt and southern rock music and everything rodeo. We've got you covered. Two words. Cowboy up. KWBY.
Extreme Sports Medics, for the most in medical standbys. Extreme Sports Medics has it all. With offices in Kansas, Missouri, Ohio, Oklahoma City, and Texas, and can be licensed in any state. Contact Extreme Sports Medics for your next event. Whether it's a race or sporting event, company picnic or party, Special Olympics or Relay for Life event. One call does it all. Also providing certified medical bullfighters and specialty acts for your next rodeo. Extreme Sports Medics is proud to provide medical standby for International Finals Rodeo and the 2012 ACRA Medical Team of the Year. Also an official dealer for Two Bulls Sports Rub. ExtremeSportsMedics.com.
Humps and Horns Bull Riding Magazine, the world's largest bull riding publication, is now featuring barebacks and saddle broncs, as well as tons of information and articles on the extreme sport of bull riding. From the PBR to the MBR, and all occasions in between, Humps and Horns covers it all. Subscribe today for the low price of just $35, and receive a new issue in your mailbox every month for a year. Visit us at humpsandhorns.com, or call 866-464-6397 to get your subscription started today. Remember, if you like bull riding, you'll love Humps and Horns.
You're listening to the Make an 8 Rodeo Network. So sit back on the ranch and let's talk some rodeo history with all your favorites on KWBY 98.5 and 107.9 FM and MakeAn8Rodeo.com.
Welcome back on the ranch right here with the Make an 8 Rodeo Network as we are able to sit back talk a little rodeo, talk about things that are happening in the rodeo world. Now, for our listeners that are tuned in right now, both here on MakingARodeo.com and our friends at KWBY 98.5 and 107.9 FM in Stephenville, Texas, I want to share with you that this guy that we're about to bring on and introduce, you got to listen to this story. This is a story of inspiration. This guy can inspire just about anybody, and we're going to have a chance to talk a little rodeo with him, and we are proud to bring him on as one of our newest colleagues here. They call him Dr. Rodeo, Steve Vaquet. So, Steve, welcome back on the ranch, my friend.
Hey, Scott, how are you?
I'm doing fantastic. I am doing really great here on a Monday night, man, but we're so glad to be able to catch up with you and, you know, really kind of listen to a little bit of a story about how we can accomplish our dreams, for starters, but, you know, what it means for somebody in the rodeo business like yourself. Steve, tell us first off a little bit about tell us about yourself, for starters, how you got started and just where you come from in the rodeo business.
Okay. Well, I'm originally from Cypress, Texas, and both sides of my family, my mom's side of the family and my dad's side of the family, were all farmers and ranchers and a lot of folks involved in rodeo. While my aunts and uncles and cousins, I actually had a cousin, Ken Baquet, that was a calf roper from Louisiana that qualified for the NFR a couple of times. He passed away several years back. But long-standing tradition of a lot of people in my family and extended family involved in rodeo. I started in Little Britches rodeos, like, you know, a lot of folks, and then got involved in high school rodeo, went to the Marines. We're both fellow jarheads, you and
That's
I, Scott.
Right.
And got involved in, absolutely, brother, Semper Fi. Ended up getting involved in military rodeos when I was stationed out in 29 Palms, California, and then also at Camp Pendleton. Camp Pendleton does a big military rodeo right there on the base every year in Oceanside, California, at Camp Pendleton. And ended up winning the military national finals all-around title, placed in all three rough stock events and two timed events. That was a long time and many pounds ago. But
wow.
got out of the Marine Corps and was offered a scholarship to Southwest Texas State University in San Marcos, Texas, for college rodeo. And very proud to have been part of the 1984 College National Finals Championship team from Southwest Texas
wow.
State University in San Marcos. And then I thought, well, okay, now I'm going to go out there and hit the road hot, hard, and heavy. And some injuries started catching up with me. And the doctors basically told me if I wanted to stand erect and be able to walk, I might want to consider another line of work. Because as you know, Scott, in the rodeo world, it's not if you're going to get hurt, it's when and how bad.
That's right.
So ended up starting a horse-drawn carriage company in downtown Houston and over by the Galleria there in Houston, Texas. And initially I did well for a while, but I was young, single, and stupid and didn't know how to manage my money. And it was way too much wine, women, and song. And the company went under, and I ended up finding myself completely, totally wiped out financially, got my truck repoed, kicked out of the place I was living, and ended up spending about 6 months in between a couple of homeless shelters over by the Astrodome in Houston. And
wow.
that was a real, real wake-up call for me, and well, you know, since I was homeless and I didn't have any place to go or nothing to do, the libraries were a safe, clean place with clean bathrooms and air conditioning in the summer and heat in the winter to kind of get out of the weather. And so I started reading a lot of books. And I read about military leaders and presidents and explorers and, you know, business leaders and just all sorts of great inspirational, motivational books. And I started seeing a pattern. I'm like, well, were they born for greatness? Was greatness thrust upon them? Or was there something that they did at a critical juncture in their life that led to them, you know, accomplishing whatever they had, you know, accomplished? And so I saw a pattern, and then I realized I got myself into this mess, and I had nobody to blame except me. I had to look at the man in the mirror, and the guy who got me there, a lot of people that go around, you know, oh, poor, pitiful me, and blame everybody else in the world for their problems, and instead of manning up, and you're pretty much exactly where you are in life due to the decisions that you make.
Sure.
And so I was making poor decisions, and so I thought, if I can get myself into this mess, I can get myself out. And my folks had moved from Houston, oh, actually Cypress, Texas, right outside Houston, up to Lakehurst, New Jersey, with the Naval Air Engineering Center in Lakehurst. My dad was working, you know, for the Navy. He's a fellow Marine as well. I come from a long line of Marines. Marines
and cowboys.
Marines and cowboys, yep. And cowboy Marines.
That's right.
But ended up, after going through my homeless ordeal, my folks had moved up here to New Jersey, I guess, oh, maybe a year and a half, 2 years before all this happened to me. And so I moved back in with my folks just to have a roof over my head and, you know, something to eat. And the closest thing I could find to cowboy work, you know, I was used to doing ranch, you know, farm and ranch work. I ended up working at Six Flags Great Adventure in their animal safari park. And it was the closest thing I could find to doing ranch work. It was kind of cool taking care of zebras and elephants and giraffes and rhinos and this kind of thing. And but believe it or not, rhinos are pretty much, you got to handle them the same way you got to handle a bull. You know?
Oh, I can imagine. I can imagine.
Yep.
I would not want to be at the front end of one of those.
No, but you got to do the same thing. You got to turn quick.
I bet.
And
did that convert you into being a bullfighter at all?
No. I have a great deal of respect for these bullfighters and clowns, man. These guys, you know, my hat's off to them, boy. They got a tough
That's
job,
true.
And they're really good at it, and they're quite professionals. I never had the guts or the gumption to do that everything. And after taking a couple of nasty spills off of some bulls, I'm like, you know, these saddle bronc horses and bareback horses, they don't try to intentionally come kill you when you fall off.
I know.
On the pickup man's horse. And so I'm like, as I got older, I'm like, you know, I think I'm going to concentrate on bears and broncs. <You know? laughs>
Maybe I should have done that too.
Oh, I hear you. Yeah, you had some nasty accidents with some bulls as well.
You betcha. Well, like you said, it's not a matter of if; it's a matter of when and how bad.
When exactly? I know a lot of our fellow fans and cowboys out there, they can attest to that wholeheartedly.
Absolutely, absolutely. So going back to Six Flags, you were working at Six Flags there, huh?
Yep. Six Flags Great Adventure up here in the Jackson, New Jersey area.
Wow. And so I've got to ask, though, I mean, you don't get to dabble on the ranches or anything. There's not many ranches up in New Jersey. I worked in New Jersey, so I know that the space is very limited up there. Am I right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, not a lot, you know, a lot of people would be surprised. Not a lot of ranches and rodeos, you know, the closer to New York City that you get. I know y'all might find that hard to believe, but trust me. not a lot of open space.
That's right.
You sneeze and your next door neighbor says Gesundheit, okay?
I know it.
But, ended up meeting a nice girl up here and fell in love and got married and... I went back to school studying agriculture, farm and ranch management, trying to finish my degree at Rutgers University Cook College up in New Brunswick, New Jersey, and wanted to get into a college of veterinary medicine to specialize in equine and work at the racetracks up here. because I was working at that time part-time as a farrier and floating teeth out at the tracks at the Meadowlands for standardbred and thoroughbred horses. And when I was taking these courses at Rutgers Cook College, and, you know, newlyweds, a lot of my professors, I've been around horses and cows since I was knee-high to a grasshopper. And so in the hands-on labs and stuff, I was like the professor's dream come true. But when I would take a test, I was failing the test. And so the professor pulls me aside and he says, you know more about this than probably anybody in the class. But he says, you're failing all my tests and you're failing the course. He says, I think you have some type of learning disability and we want to get you tested. And I'm like, okay. And so they sent me off and I was like, 28, almost 29 years old at this point. And they tell me I suffer from dyslexia, where you invert numbers and letters.
Right.
And told me that basically I was functionally illiterate, that I had the equivalency of a fourth grade reading and writing comprehension level. And the dean told me, well, you're never going to be able to matriculate, much less graduate, and going to vet school is a pipe dream at best. And my wife was pregnant with our first child all at the same time. So my dreams of becoming a large animal vet, you know, were just kind of scrapped and told that that was never going to happen. And then my wife went into premature labor, and our first child, he was born early. And we just lived for a very short time period, and then we lost him. And this all happened with the college and my son, everything, within weeks of each other. And so I was just devastated. All I wanted to do was pack up, go back home to Texas, go back to work on somebody's farm or ranch, and, you know, bury my head in the sand like an ostrich and put all this behind me. But my wife, not just Italian, Sicilian, wasn't going to leave her close-knit Italian family up here in New Jersey. And so, you know the old saying, when they give you lemons, yeah, make lemonade.
That's right. That's right.
And so I took what I knew and I loved, and in the memory of my child, Paul Joseph Bakke, we started a little toy line, the PJ Buckaroo line of toys, making Western-themed cowboy toys. And the first thing that I did, I used to do a little trick roping, and sometimes I would work as a specialty act in rodeos. If I didn't make enough from, you know, placing in the events, I would pick up a small check from doing a specialty act that I would have gas money and entry fee money for the next rodeo, doing some trick roping. And even back in the day, I did a little bit of trick riding, but never was that good of a trick rider. Wow. But could hold my own as a trick roper. So ended up the first toy I made was a little kid's trick rope that, you know, any kid can instantly spin and be like Will Rogers. And the Will Rogers Follies was on Broadway up here in New York, and a friend of mine, I'm trying to think of Bruce's last name, real tall, skinny fellow named Bruce. He did a lot of work for Flying U with Cotton Rosser out in California. He's from England, from of all places. Great trick roper. The name's going to come to me. I know his first name is Bruce. He was the trick roper in the show because Carradine could not spin a rope to save his life. That was playing Will Rogers. And so this guy would come out and do a really good trick roping routine. He didn't have an understudy in the area. And so, you know, he found out, hey, Steve, you're up here. You want to be my understudy as the trick roper on the Will Rogers Follies? I'm like, all right. And the producer of the show asked me to teach these little kids how to spin a rope, but the real thing. They didn't have enough manual dexterity or motor skills to be able to do this. And so I knew it was the time of the Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo back then. I'm showing how old I am. It was still at the Astrodome, not the new Reliant Center. It was still the old Astrodome. So I go up back home, see my family. I go to the rodeo, and I'm tilting back a couple of cold ones with my buddies, and I'm watching this guy sell these ropes. And every little kid wanted to buy one of these ropes as like a keepsake from the rodeo, and all the mothers like, oh no, you're going to hang yourself, little brother, sister, dog, or cat with that thing, because it did pull down tight into a noose. And so I thought,
right.
You know, if I can make it better, safer, cheaper, faster, I'll maybe make a little more money. So I buy a box of these ropes from this guy, and I head back up to New Jersey, and I'm there on Broadway in the middle of Times Square in New York City on the Will Rogers Follies Broadway show. And I start selling, and I give these ropes to these kids, but I keep tinkering with it. I keep making it, like, how can I make it better? How can I make it safer? How can I make it easier for a kid to instantly be able to do this? And little did I know that this was all the elements of how to design a better product. And I started selling them off of a table, just a folding card table in the back of the Will Rogers Follies. And that was the start of my toy company.
Wow.
Yeah, that little toy company grew a little bit.
And from what we understand now, Steve, we've had an opportunity to look into a little bit of that. Your little toy company turned into a pretty big toy company, right?
Well, we ended up with 60 products on the shelves at Kmart, Walmart, Toys R Us. We were in a couple of thousand Western Wear stores and Spiegel catalog and Disney World, Disneyland, Euro Disney when they were still around. You name it. We were all over the place, JCPenney catalog, Sears Wish Book, but primarily Kmart, Walmart, and Toys R Us. And, company grew at the height of the company. I had about 850 employees, and there was something kind of unique about those employees, Scott.
Yeah, you know, that's what we understand. You know, having that big of an operation, you've got to have a lot of people that are able to help produce this product. And,
I had a pretty good product line at that point. I had about 60 different items, but my entire workforce were all physically and mentally disabled individuals. I don't really like to call it disabled. I like to call it, you know, physically and mentally able or challenged.
Right.
You know, because all of them, God does not make junk. We are all put here for a purpose. We don't have disposable people. And I ended up becoming the largest employer of the physically and mentally disabled in a 3-state area that I was using all these folks on a contracted basis, making my toys. And we had put on the packaging, proudly made in the USA by persons with disabilities. And a lot of people like that, and mothers and grandmothers who, you know, would buy toys, they were willing to spend, you know, an extra 10, 20, 50 cents for my product made in the USA as opposed to something made in China. And
sure.
So the company kept growing and got a lot of other investors and this type of deal. And then we got picked up in the New York Times with a story about my toy company. Then it got picked up by the AP Wire Service. And next thing I know, I get a weird phone call. I don't know if you remember our conversation there in Texas, what was it, about 2.5 weeks ago. But
yes, sir.
Me listening to country music, I was introduced to a music, I guess, personality or whatever the heck you'd want to call it that I had never heard of before. I get a call from these people, and they say they're with the Oprah Winfrey Show. And I thought it was a friend yanking my chain, pulling a practical joke. I didn't believe them. I'm like, yeah, right. And I hang up. They call back, and they're like, yes, we're with the Oprah Winfrey Show. We want you to be a guest on the show. And I'm like, it wasn't even that funny the first time. You know, click, everything. They called my wife at the hospital where she works, and they talked to her, and she calls me. She's like, they're going to call again. Don't you dare hang up. This is for real. Next thing I know, we're on Oprah. And so there I am backstage, and I'm a little nervous, you know, because that's seen by a lot of folks. And I'm sitting backstage in the green room, and they take my wife and daughter, you know, out, and I'm backstage, and I'm sitting there, and I'm just kind of nervous. And there's a security guard back there, and he's got a little TV monitor that shows the actual stage with all the people and Oprah and the, you know, the crowd there. And so I asked the guy, and I said, how many people are watching this? And I should have clarified. I meant like that we're in the audience. And he says, oh, about 20 million. So now I'm really nervous. And then I saw this guy, and but he was a guy, but he was dressed like a woman. It was RuPaul. I had never heard of him because I listen to two types of music, Scott. I listen to country and Western.
Yeah. There you go.
And I had never heard of RuPaul, but here was this African-American gentleman in these high heel platform shoes with the mini skirt and a blonde wig. And now and I'm like, are they taping? And I asked the security guard, are they taping two shows today? And he's like, no. And I said, I think y'all got me for the wrong program. Yeah. And he's like, no, you're on next. So now I'm terrified. I'm sitting there thinking Oprah's got me confused with something else on the show.
They're going to hand you a dress and a wig and say you're on.
Yeah, you know, so I'm mortified, and I'm a short, heavy-set guy. I walk out on stage, and RuPaul, he's got to be like, I don't know, maybe 6'6", 6'7", barefoot, and he's got all these platform shoes that are about almost a foot high. I'm not exaggerating.
Right.
These things were huge. So it made him like 7.5 feet tall. He stands up to shake my hand. It's like I'm staring the man in the crotch. It was the most embarrassing thing. And so now I'm sitting there thinking, Oprah, when we come back for the commercial break, she's going to be like, so, Steve, are you ready to come out of the closet? You know, and, oh, I was just so scared. But, yeah, it was about my toy company. And at that time, we were in the process of selling the toy company to a much bigger toy company out of Chicago. And ended up doing really well there. And then I got another interesting phone call, and it was from Disney Pixar.
Wow.
Yep. And, well, I think you know a little bit about that.
We do, and we call when, you know, obviously Disney Pixar is one of the greatest animation companies that have produced some great, great films. But, you know, of course, my first question would be is how is a toy maker going to be involved with any kind of film until you start to put two and two together, one of the most legendary films that Disney Pixar created was The Toy Story.
And Woody the Cowboy.
That's right. And so what did they actually approach you on? What were they looking for?
Well, they were gathering, they had their own team of people, obviously, with Disney Pixar, and then Mattel was doing a lot of the master licensing. Then they were doing cross-promotional marketing with McDonald's, putting little figures in McDonald's Happy Meals. And, you know, so they had a really good formula of how to promote and market, and obviously they know how to do, you know, animated features. I mean, Disney's the master at that. But they were looking to bring in some consultants. They wanted people that had toy background experience of designing, developing, and marketing toys. And then they also were looking for some people that had, like, you know, a cowboy background. And then they're like, well, here's a toy maker with the cowboy background. And so, they call me up. I'm like, sure. And so it was so much fun sitting around with a bunch of other guys around my own age or a little older. I'm in my 50s now. And most of the guys that were working on this at the time, we were in our 40s and 50s. A couple of gentlemen were even older. And we all sat around reminiscing about the toys we played with as kids. That was going to be totally new to the new kids, like the Slinky Dog and Mr. Potato Head, and you know a lot of the other toys that you know the great Disney animators and Imagineers brought to life in Toy Story. Obviously, it was so successful that it led to Toy Story 2 and Toy Story 3, and I was just blessed, truly blessed, to even have just a tiny little part in that, and got to meet and work with just some really awesome people. And, it was just a great, fun experience, some of the most fun I ever had outside the rodeo arena. was working with these folks on Toy Story. It was just a true blast, and Disney, Pixar, and Mattel, and McDonald's, a lot of really top notch professional folks there.
Wow, that is amazing to just even to know that somebody, you know, that they actually utilize people, you know, with a history in that to bring them on board. And that is, I mean, that's really amazing. Number one, just knowing the type of person that Walt Disney is. I'm from Florida, so, of course, being down there, you know, mm-hmm. Walt Disney is like the grandfather of Florida. He helped create Florida, so to speak, you know, in the tourism industry down there for what it is. So, I mean, you know, to know that what they did, and that's truly something that Walt Disney had always done, was try mm-hmm. to reach out to people and reach out to kids and find out what would connect and, mm-hmm. and put those pieces together. And so I'm sure that they really picked your brain. Now, as you guys were sitting around sharing stories and things like that.
Scott, I'm just a big kid at heart. Anybody who knows me, it's like, you know, I may grow older, but I refuse to grow up.
That's yeah, right.
I am literally just a big kid at heart. Anybody who spent more than 5 minutes with me will easily attest to that. Everything. I'm just like a little boy trapped in an old fat man's body.
Well, Steve, I've got to say now, you and I have spent some lengthy conversations, you know, talking on the phone and getting to know each other and things mm-hmm. like that. And we really want to get in and learn more about Steve Baquet and what you have accomplished. There's so many things that go on. I mean, your story is truly a book in itself.
I literally went from homeless and dyslexic to becoming, you know, a successful businessman. And I, you know, don't want to brag or anything, but one of the accomplishments that I was able to rack up with my toy company is there's a business award that's the equivalency of the Super Bowl, or for our industry, of, you know, the NFR, and it's called right. the Entrepreneur of the Year program. And people like Michael Dell of Dell Computers, the founders of Starbucks, the founders of Enterprise Rent-A-Car, the founders of Best Buy, this type of thing. I mean, some very substantial companies have been honored to receive the award Entrepreneur of the Year. Then back home in Texas, the owner of the Dallas Cowboys also won Entrepreneur of the Year the exact same year that I did, 1993.
Wow.
I was Ernst & Young, Inc. magazine, Merrill Lynch's Entrepreneur of the Year in 1993. Racked up a bunch of other awards, been on Oprah and a ton of other talk shows. Once it was funny, once you get on one, then next thing you know, every talk show and news program known to man is calling you up, and it just kind of becomes a whirlwind, and you feel sure. like the stars or something that are like promoting their newest movie or their newest album or their newest book or something. I probably made all the big talk shows and the late night talk shows and the major news programs for all major networks in about a 4 month period. I hit all of them.
Wow.
You
know? Wow.
So, yeah, but with that, at 2:50, I can get a cup of coffee, mostly due to the fact of the 2:50.
So. I hear you. Well, now, one of the other things that you've done, Steve, and we really want to get in and talk about this, is you as the Dr. Rodeo, now that you actually went back to school.
Yeah, I went back to school. Yeah, I ended up getting my completing, it was a goal of mine. Everyone told me I was stupid, and, you know, they told me I was functionally illiterate, and I had a hard time growing up in school, you know, due to my undiagnosed dyslexia. Most kids are like, what, 17, 18 years old when they graduate from high school?
Right.
I was 20, almost 21 years old when I got out of high school. They didn't know what to do with me. I had a hard
wow.
time, but they didn't know about dyslexia, and they just kept promoting me. So I had a lot of people always tell me I was a little slow, and, you know, being from the South, you know, bless his heart, type of deal, and, you know, and this type of thing. It just also being called stupid. And so it became a real issue for me. and I wanted to slowly go back to school. And one of the things that I did, I started college fresh out of the Marine Corps in 1984, and I didn't finish my college education till 2004. That's 20
wow.
years. That's while working full-time with a wife and two kids that I slowly, every semester, took a couple of classes. And I guess one of the things that I do to help motivate and inspire people, if you want to do something bad enough, you'll find a way, and you'll just
That's
stick
right.
with it. You know, and you know, every time, you know, you get bucked off, what do? You pull yourself up, you dust yourself off, and you climb right back on.
Get back on, and, that's right.
Exactly, and that's basically, you know, it took me 20 years, but I was able to knock out my bachelor's degree, then my master's degree, and then finally completed my doctoral dissertation and earned my PhD. And so, yeah, then a lot of folks, you know, just would start referring to me as Doc. And then I ended up messing up my back, and I spent, oh, God, almost the last 14, 15 months constantly back and forth to multiple doctors and physical therapy, and then I had major back surgery, and I was laying flat on my back with my feet elevated, typically 14, 18 hours a day because
wow.
of my back was so messed up. And I got so bored and just, you know, grumpy from just laying around with nothing to do and this type of thing. My wife says, well, you got to do something to occupy your mind. And so she
yeah.
says, why don't you write another book? And
now,
you've
already written a couple books, correct?
Yeah, I had other books on business and finance, this type of thing, and then on how to be a I've been a motivational and professional speaker for about, 15, 16 years now. And then I was
right.
doing a lot of public speaking on cruise ships as a port destination speaker, and I had a book about that. But I decided I wanted to write a book about something I really loved and that was near and dear to my heart. And,
right.
of course, I think you know what that is.
That would, of course, have to be rodeo.
Absolutely. I wanted to get back to my roots. I mean, too, when I was making all my toys, they were all Western-themed cowboy toys. Because originally, you know what I was doing, Scott? I was going to the rodeos and sell the stuff direct to the public for a while because it was a way for me to get back around the rodeo. you
sure.
know as well as I do, once it gets in your blood, you're hooked for life.
Yes.
you know?
That's right.
You know,
that's right.
It's like you have no choice in it. Being a cowboy is not something that you do. It's who you are.
you that's know? Right. You're absolutely right, and I've said that many times. I mean that is perfectly summed up, Steve. You cannot take it. You can take the cowboy out of the country. But you cannot take the country out of the cowboy.
They took me out of Texas and planted me in the middle of New Jersey, and you know, I'm like, what did Popeye say? I am what I am.
That's right.
You know, and so yeah, I ended up basically going to the doctors and going to physical therapy and having to lay flat on my back with my legs elevated to help my lower back. I decided I was going to write a book, and it was probably the easiest book and the fastest book I've ever done and the most fun I've ever had out of all the books I've written, all about the history of our sport of rodeo. And, you know, I kind of go briefly from colonial America, very briefly, and getting all the way up to the Civil War, and then going into the great cattle drives from Texas up to the railheads after the Civil War and the birth of the golden era of the cowboy, and then the birth of rodeos, and then it evolved into the Wild West shows, and that evolved into actual rodeos as we know it now. And I kind of follow the history from like the
wow.
early 1900s all the way up to the present day, and then the spinoffs of, you know, like the PBR and the Pro Roughstock and Iron Cowboy and all the other things and how the sport has grown and on television. And then I get specifically into each and every event, its history, its origin, the equipment, the techniques, the scoring, the style, and the history. I mean, you being a bull rider, do you know how far back bull riding actually goes, Scott?
Well, I can honestly tell you that I don't know the exact time period, but I would say that it goes back to the early 1900s, and I believe it had something to do with a couple cowboys sitting on a ranch, and one was talking a little bit about to the other one, and they decided to make a bet. Am I right?
Well, that's what a lot of people think, and that can hold true to a certain level, but archaeologists have discovered in Rome and in Greece and even in Egypt with
wow.
the pyramids.
Now, they weren't riding rhinoceroses, were they?
they were not riding rhinoceroses, no. They weren't riding rhinos, everything. But they actually have uncovered in some of the Roman Colosseum type venues that they had throughout the Roman Empire of paintings of men riding bulls.
Really?
Yeah, I just found that so fascinating and interesting. And the Romans
wow.
basically got it from the Greeks. And so
wow.
when we really think about it, this has been around for a long, long time.
Sure.
And a lot of people, you know, did not know that. I mean, it's like I have a lot of friends in the rodeo world at every level. And also barrel racing. A lot of people are amazed to realize that in 1932 at Madison Square Garden in New York City with Gene Autry, he was the very first singing
right.
cowboy at a rodeo, the women wore these nice flashy sequined shirts and carried sponsorship flags, and they were called sponsor girls, and rode in a pattern around the arena, and the girls just kind of getting bored and wanting to compete, just like guys on the ranch, you know, who could do something the fastest. You know, the old saying, you know, never was a horse that couldn't be rode, and never was a cowboy that couldn't be throwed, and they would
That's
start
right.
betting and this type of thing. And of course, the birth of rodeo. But these sponsor girls would start riding and try to see who could do this the fastest, and that was the very first origin of what later became barrel racing, and then putting up the barrels and determining the distance and then the timing for barrel racing, this type of thing. And so I cover all this really unique history about every aspect of every event and professional rodeo, and even some events of high school rodeo and college rodeo and other events that are even covered in other countries. There's a
wow.
strong rodeo tradition in Brazil and Chile and Australia. A lot of people
right.
do not realize. I talk about down in your neck of the woods where you're originally from. I know you're there in Paris, Texas now, but down in Florida, there's something called the Cracker Cowboy.
That's right. That's
and
right.
then out in Hawaii, there's the Paniolo. And a lot of people were just like, and then, you know, of course, out in California, we have the vaquero, you know, going back to the original origins of you know, the Spanish tradition for cowboys. And I cover all this
right.
in the book. Now, I even cover from some great legends in our sport, guys like Larry Mahan, you know, and then all the way up to, like, the present day, you know, of, like, you know, Ty Murray, this type of thing, or even going further back
wow.
to Larry Mahan, all the way back to, like, Jim Shoulders. And I talk about our history and where we came from. I was talking to a couple of young bull riders this last weekend that I was announcing the rodeo, and we were all sitting around talking after the rodeo, and me and the stock contractor and one of the other older gentlemen that was there supplying the bulls, we were talking about the great Freckles Brown. And these young 18, 19-year-old guys that are bull riders had no clue who Freckles Brown was. And I'm like, You really need to know the history of our sport. They didn't know who Jim Shoulders was. I showed them a picture in my book, and in this picture was Donnie Gabe, Larry Mahan, and then they said, "Who's that tall, skinny guy at the end?" I said, "That's Bobby Steiner." They're like, "Who?" I'm like, "Oh, exactly." And so that's the other thing is that I think for any sport, but especially ours, because we have such a rich heritage and this evolved out of actual ranch work, at least most of the events or some of the events, some were invented in the arena for the enjoyment of the spectators. But it's important to know how we got to where we are today with the huge payouts and then like the Iron Cowboy and this type of thing, you know, and how we got there to really be able to appreciate the sport. And then I feel as an announcer, I hear a lot of announcers and they do a wonderful job and they talk about more about the resume of the cowboy or the cowgirl.
Right.
And I feel it's more important to tell the audience about the rules and regulations and the technique for each event in a brief little bit about the history, but very short, because a lot of people may be diehard rodeo fans like you and I, and they know this stuff, but there may be that person in the audience that this is their very first rodeo. And we have to treat everyone in the audience as if it's their very first rodeo and assume that they know nothing about the sport and they'll be able to learn. I had the honor and privilege when I went to Chad Nicholson's rodeo announcing school late January, early February of this year, getting to learn from Chad Nicholson, great announcer and a good friend of mine. And we also got to meet and help one of the people who helped teach the class was the legendary Bob Tallman.
Right.
You know, and anybody in the industry knows who Bob Tallman is. I mean, only man alive who's announced the national finals 19 times. He's won announcer of the year so many times I can't even keep track anymore, you know, as the top announcer of the year. He's just a living legend as a rodeo announcer. Well, and he told our class, there was, I guess, about maybe 15 or 18 of us at this rodeo announcing school. We were there at the Fort Worth Stock Show, and we watched him do a performance. And then afterwards, he spent a couple hours with us, and it was really great information coming from Bob Tallman. And he said, "I went to a hockey game." And he says, "You know, being from Texas, I never saw too much hockey, so I didn't know much about it." And he says, "I liked it, and I was listening to the sportscasters. But," he says, "I didn't understand the subtleties in the rules and the regulations at each position and what their role was and the overall strategy. I just saw guys skating around trying to get a little puck into, you know, a goal." He said, then he heard another sportscaster really explain in detail all the rules and regulations and the strategy in each position and what each player, offense and defense, did. Then he knew more about the game of hockey. And so then when he watched it, he understood it, and so therefore he enjoyed it more. And that's the main thing I took away. And so it's like when I wrote this book and now announcing, I tried to make sure that the audience comes away learning something that they did not know before about the sport that we love. Because I think it's just, for those who already love it, they're going to be like, "Wow, that was something I did not know." And for the new people, maybe we've converted some new fans, maybe even some future contestants. And so, I've had so much fun writing this book. And by the way, its title is Bronx, Bulls, and Buckles.
Sure. And very, very fitting. Now, I've had an opportunity, Steve, to take a look at this book. And, you know, one thing that truly impressed me were not only the facts and the documents behind each one of these events and the amount of research that had to go into that, but also the illustrations that are there. Now, I'm a picture type of guy, you know, so when I sit back and look at a book, you know, of course, I'm probably like any 13 or 12-year-old. I want to go look at the pictures, you know. But really,
there's
in all actuality, man, it is so wonderful to see the history come alive in your book.
Oh, thank you. There are over 1,200. Let me repeat that. 1,200 images, photos, and illustrations, this type of thing, in this book. And some of them are some very rare photos going way back in the early history of rodeo and the Wild West shows, all the way up to the present day. And I had the privilege of working with some top-notch PRCA rodeo photographers, and the guy who did the cover artwork, Greg Westfall, great PRCA photographer, been around the rodeo circuit for well over 20 years, designed my cover work for me, and he just did an outstanding job. And so,
whoa.
Yeah, and then I was able to talk with, and a lot of my friends are stock contractors. Of course, Cotton Rosser was Flying U, and, you know, the Butler family, you know, with Benny Butler and them. And then even a lot of people would not realize, this might be a perfect segue from what we'll go to next, but one of the oldest continuous weekly summertime series rodeos in the entire United States for the Professional Rodeo Cowboys Association is the Cowtown Rodeo in Woodstown, New Jersey. Yes, let me repeat that. New Jersey, right before the Delaware Memorial Bridge. And they are in their 59th consecutive season, but they started the rodeo in 1929. And then it became a regular weekly series 59 years ago. Every May through September, rain or shine, every Saturday night, the Harris family, Grant Howard Harris and his family, they put on one of the best traditional rodeos in the country. I think it's 150, 200 contestants every weekend from all over the United States. And he puts a couple of thousand people into the stands. And, you know, he does a very traditional, old-fashioned type rodeo. And then, of course, my buddy Cotton Rosser with Flying U, he's the P.T. Barnum of the rodeo world. He brings in every type of circus act known to man. And so I actually talk about and compare, because I love them both, and they both put on such a great show, but they're so different. One is a rodeo with, like, circus acts, and one is just a traditional rodeo, and it's in Woodstown, New Jersey.
Wow. Well, listen, Steve, why don't we do this? Now, we're already up to the 8 o'clock hour. We're running past that just a little bit, so we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll actually talk a little bit more about it, and you had a chance to pay a visit down there, so we'll kind of let
absolutely
the fans know a little bit more about what Steve Baquet is out here doing. You guys are listening to the Back on the Ranch show right here with MakingEightRodeo.com. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Hey, this is Sam Riggs of Sam Riggs and the Night People, and you're listening to the Making Eight Rodeo Network.
Rodeo Safety One, manufacturing some of the best equipment for making yourself or your rodeo event the safest it can be. With bucking chute crash pads made with the toughest foam inserts from BFCI, the makers of NASCAR safety equipment. Box pads with 1.5 high density foam protection, great for marketing and advertisements during your events. Also selling the best in rodeo equipment, from bull ropes, gloves, and spurs, to Ride Right safety vests and the hottest products right now. Your rodeo logbook, great for when the IRS comes knocking on your door. Don't accept the liability. Protect the animals and cowboys at your next rodeo. For more information or packages, visit RodeoSafetyOne.com and find them on Facebook.
Partner, you know what time it is.
Are you crazy?
Let him out, boys.
The Making Eight Rodeo Network is live, and I have got to tell you, to be down here with good friends and have the support that we've had down here was just amazing.
Catch all the rodeo action with Scott Masick and Making Eight Rodeo Network right here on KWBY, 107.9 FM and 98.5 FM. Live reports from rodeos all over the country. Rodeo wrap-ups, and interviews with the top cowboys and cowgirls in the sport. Check out MakingEightRodeo.com for videos and links, as well as KWBYRadio.com, as we have teamed up to bring you the best in music and rodeo. Your source for rodeo news just got bigger. Making 8 Rodeo Network and KWBY. Only on Cowboy Capital, Cowboy Radio.
I love watching you together.
This is pro angler Jay Brainerd, and when I'm on the water, I'm listening to KWBY, Cowboy Capital, Cowboy Radio.
You're listening to the Making 8 Rodeo Network. So sit back on the ranch and let's talk some rodeo history with all your favorites on KWBY 98.5 and 107.9 FM and MakingEightRodeo.com.
All right, welcome back on the ranch as we are sitting back here tonight talking with Steve Baquet. Steve, man, you know, like I said, we could share so much detail of your story here, and we wouldn't have enough time in the day. And it's such a great, inspiring story for any of us,
thanks.
You know, myself included, who, you know, have that dream. And, you know, we all make bad choices in life, but, you know, it's how we move past those and
exactly.
We continue to drive on. And we have two roads to take when we get to those things, and we can either pick ourselves up or we can sit and mope about it. But the cowboy way is to dust yourself off and get back on that horse. And you've certainly proven that you've done that. And so you are a true inspiration to all of us. And, you know, so much of your life is, you know, I can personally relate to, and I'm sure that a lot of our listening audience can as well. But, you know, the thing that struck me the most is how rodeo was always there. It never went away. You know,
no.
No matter what you did, no matter where you went, rodeo was always there. And, you know, you talked about your writing of this book and doing the research and how much fun it was for you and all. Now, it is actually out on the market. Is that correct?
Yeah, well, right now people can contact me directly through Facebook, this type of thing, and they can order the book directly from me. And it is out in a couple of Western Wear stores, actually through Cavender's at a couple of locations
right.
there in Texas. And looking to I'll be shipping hopefully here in the very near future a larger order to Cavender's Western Wear stores and getting it picked up by a couple other places. And my book agent is getting it into Barnes & Noble, Borders, and it'll be available on Amazon in the ebook. But right now, the best way to get the book, because we're not in full distribution yet, we just did a test marketing, and the test marketing went extremely well during the Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo.
Right.
And this type of thing, and then a couple other Western Wear stores throughout different parts of the country where I'm at, and at direct to the public at rodeos where I'm announcing. But the best way for people to get it is contact me through Facebook under Stephen Baquet or Steve Baquet Rodeo Announcer, and pop me an email, and I can send you out all the information, and they can order the book, and we'll get it out to you.
Wonderful. And you know, I'd certainly want to recommend is having an opportunity to go through this book. Is this is something that I think every rodeo enthusiast, whether it's a fan or a contestant or somebody who's lived or been a part of the rodeo, to take an opportunity to read this book, because it truly is. I mean, there's so much history and detail in it. And you know, these younger contestants, like you said, a lot of them don't know a lot of this history. So this is very informative for them as well.
Oh, yeah. And one of the most fun things for me was being able to contact guys that were my heroes, these legendary cowboys and stock contractors, and calling them up and saying, hey, can you give me information for this book I'm working on? Can you tell me about some of the things that you experienced, you know, as a top world champion, you know, in your event, or even an all-around champion? And what was it like back in, you know, the 60s and 70s and this type of thing, all the way up to the guys now, you know, that are still competing? And every one of them was like, oh, sure, not a problem, and were so, like, great to work with, and were just a wealth of knowledge And it was so much fun just contacting all these legendary cowboys, this type of thing. And every single one was like, yeah, sure, I'd love to help you. Because that's how cowboys are.
That's right.
It's part of our code, our cowboy code.
You bet, you bet. Well, now, let's talk a little bit briefly about how you got involved with rodeo announcing. Now, you had mentioned that you had an opportunity to attend one of the legendary Chad Nicholson schools earlier
Absolutely.
This year, correct?
A fellow Marine, just like you and I.
That's right.
And, yeah, really great guy. He's been around well over 20 years. He's a top announcer in our sport. And he puts on a very intensive, thorough announcing school. It's like a 5-day, and you're in there like 10, 12 hours a day for 5 days, you know, so you're getting a lot of information thrown at you, you know, in a short time period. But
sure.
such a great program. And the camaraderie from the other people that you meet and you become friends with, other announcers. And I've gotten a lot of my announcing gigs since January of this year from other announcers that I met, you know, through the school and then beyond that with stock contractors and clowns, this kind of thing. It's kind of a really nice, close-knit family, you know, the whole rodeo
That's
family.
Right.
And, you know, to really get back into that and meet so many other great people, and they're all so willing to help. And, clown and announcer Joey Dumas, said, hey, you got to go check out my friend Scott. And, you know, I was doing a rodeo with him in Louisiana, and then we met in person there in Sulphur Springs, a couple
That's
of weeks
right.
ago. And, I saw what you were doing, and I thought, wow, Scott is on to something here with this Making Eight Rodeo Network and doing the rodeo wrap-up reports on the, you know, roundup and back on the ranch. And I'm like, he's doing some big rodeos. He's doing big PBR events, you know, video casting the IFR, this type of thing. And I'm like, he's got some really neat stuff, and how can I get to be a part of this? And so we met, and I am thrilled that I can start help bringing reports and doing interviews with cowboys and stock contractors and clowns and announcers and other people in the industry from rodeos that I'm hitting across the country. But I'm also doing a lot right now up in my own neck of the woods. In the Northeast, and a lot of people don't think that there's that many rodeos up here, but they would be surprised. There's 3 or 4 good-sized PRCA stock contractors in the First Frontier Rodeo Circuit, and they're drawing good-sized crowds every weekend
That's
doing
right.
rodeos up here in the Northeast.
Well, you know, Steve, and that was something that we had talked about at the very beginning of our show. You know, of course, we had one of our good friends. We had Michael Smith, Gooby, the rodeo entertainer, and Brett Weldon, who are on the road right now attending some rodeos, kind of mm-hmm. give us an update on what's going on up in the Iowa area. But that was one thing that we discussed is we cannot be everywhere at one time. There's so many rodeos and things like that going on that
mm-hmm.
the only way we can do that is to have great friends and partners who are – you know, affiliated with Making Eight Rodeo Network, and that's what we truly want to become is a full network, and that's what we're evolving into now. And so, of course, when you and I first got in contact and we started discussing just how we could all be a part of this, you know, you living up there in that New Jersey area and having so many events already booked as an announcer up there really gave us that role to find out how the contestants are doing and learn some of the rodeos that are going on up there in those neck of the woods. And
you'd be surprised there in between the Cowtown Rodeo with Grant Harris, the Painted Pony with Sean Graham, another PRCA rodeo with Rawhide Rodeo Company, All American Rodeo, Double M. I mean, there are some, you know, I cover Pennsylvania, New York, New Jersey, Delaware, Virginia, you know, and even up into Canada. And there's even some rodeos up in Boston.
That's
you
right.
You know, everything. There, well, a lot of people would be surprised. And listen up, cowboys and cowgirls. There's some decent money up here with some top stock PRCA stock contractors and lots of added money. So, you know, consider shooting out east.
That's right. Well, you know, I've got to say, Steve, you had an opportunity to attend the Cowtown Rodeo up there just about a week and a half ago.
Yeah, I've been friends with Grant Harris for many years since I've been up here, and always went to his rodeo. When I first got up here, even though I was kind of semi-retired, I couldn't get out of my blood, and even did a little judging there back in the day as a rodeo judge, and even wanted to compete there for a while. My wife says, I don't think so anymore there, buddy. You know? But, well, yeah, I've been friends with a lot of folks there at Cowtown for well over, I'd say, almost 25 years now.
Well, Steve, you had an opportunity to check in with Grant Harris and actually sit down with him and do a little interview. So what do you say we kind of put you to the test and give our fans a little listen to what the rodeo wrap-ups are going to be like with Doc Rodeo in the Northeast. That's right. So here he is, Grant Harris and Doc Rodeo.
Hi, this is Doc Rodeo, and I'm here at the Cowtown Rodeo in Woodstown, New Jersey, with the stock contractor, Mr. Grant Harris. Mr. Harris, can you please tell us a little bit about the history of Cowtown?
My great-grandfather and grandfather... We had a local county fair, and it was not being very well attended, so and we had a livestock auction. And they had access to a lot of horses and bulls from all over the place. And they put on our first rodeo in 1929, and it was pretty darn successful. A few years later, they had continued with the rodeos, and Miller Brothers, 101 Ranch, Ponca City, Oklahoma, went bankrupt in Washington, D.C., and thought to add some authenticity to the rodeo, they'd go down to the sheriff's sale there for the Miller Brothers and end up purchasing tack and equipment, some livestock. And while they were there, a lot of the cowboys were stuck in Washington. Typical cowboys had no money. And Grandpop offered them a one-way train ticket anywhere they wanted to go if they come up to Woodstown and help with the rodeo.
That really helped start generations of contestants here in Woodstown.
Believe it or not, in my father's generation, tons of kids were raised around, and a bunch of those Miller Brothers guys hung around Woodstown for a number of years.
Wow.
During the Depression, not much going on in Oklahoma. They got jobs here and this and that, and they were raised around these guys. And there's a whole, almost a generation of my father's age that rodeo, Woodstown Rodeo, and created a lot of cowboys. Anyway, that was pretty successful. They moved out to our location out here in 1940, and World War II intervened, and they didn't start the rodeo up again until 1955, when my dad, in 54, was a national intercollegiate all-around cowboy. And my grandfather had to think of something to keep my dad home, because he was off rodeoing. And so they started the weekly rodeo in 1955 that we're
and
familiar with.
And a lot of people
here
would never realize that there's such a rich rodeo tradition here in South Jersey.
Well, as a matter of fact, I am the 13th generation of Harrison County, and some
wow.
of my ancestors drove 300 head of cattle to Valley Forge in 1778. So
wow.
we've been playing at this for a really long time.
That is outstanding. And so now this is your 67th or 68th continuous year?
Well, I like to just keep it to the weekly rodeo, as mm-hmm. that we're all familiar with here. And same age as me. It's 59th season.
59th consecutive season.
Yes, sir.
May through September. And you typically have about 100, 150 contestants?
Correct.
And almost 3,000 people on a pretty regular basis in the stands.
Yeah, a couple thousand, sure.
That's
enough.
Great. And a lot of people would not think that you would have this type of support for rodeo in New Jersey, but going strong.
Well, and I like to, so many people have, you know, the Sopranos vision of New Jersey, and I explain it that we're from Jersey, not Joysy.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so you have a lot of really great contestants here that have made it to the circuit finals.
the Dodge National Circuit Finals, this type of thing, competing here?
Absolutely. You know, just because a guy's address is Pennsylvania or Maryland or New Jersey, there's still some very, very tough competitors in all the events. And over the years, we've had, going back a ways, probably 7 or 8 guys from this address make it to the NFR, too.
Mm-hmm. Now, you have cowboys coming from probably like 5, 6, 7 states surrounding
this
area?
Pretty much the northeastern United States, but you can never tell. We've got a guy from Michigan here entered this evening, a couple guys from Texas, Florida very often,
mm-hmm.
and Australians in the past. So,
wow.
You know, we're kind of off the beaten path as far as the rodeo main rodeo world is, but we get a few of them.
Now, there's some other stock contractors that, since you have the consistency, you know how your stock performs because you do a weekly rodeo, a lot of other stock contractors really value your stock, so you have also kind of another aspect of the business supplying other stock contractors?
We raise, you know, horses and bulls, mostly bulls, but some horses as well, and our really best ones usually find a pretty ready market out west.
Mm-hmm. You had a pretty famous bull named after your arena, Cowtown, went to Benny Butler, if I'm not
mistaken.
That's correct,
018, and he named him Cowtown, and was, I think, twice bull of the year.
Mm-hmm. And so not only do you have a long tradition here, but have produced some outstanding stock as well.
Well, you know, we've got about 1,500 acres here, and that's not a lot of land in some places. It's not a lot in New Jersey. About 1,000 acres of pasture, and our grass is strong. And, you know, I keep 500-600 head around here most
mm-hmm.
of the time. And if you get enough of them, numbers, you're going to get a few of them good anyway.
And you are also involved in the Born to Buck program.
Well, like I say, we've been raising bulls for 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
And really didn't get started into raising many horses until the late 70s, early 80s. And, you know, I almost kind of got away from that. My
mm-hmm.
oldest daughter married into the Moorhead family in Iowa, Three Hills Rodeo Company. And they raise a lot of good horses. And we, you know, all I do is make a phone call if I need
right.
some, and we'll get something from them. But I'm sitting at a couple years ago at the our circuit finals, and probably, in my opinion anyway, the best horses out were Cowtown Born and Bred. And I said, you know what, we spent a lot of years putting this thing together, and I'm kind of letting it go. So we're back on it now, and in fact, I've got about a dozen bred mares out in the pasture now.
That's great. Well, thank you so much for your time, and this is just an outstanding rodeo. Everyone should come out. It's every Saturday night, 7:45, rain or shine, from May through September, and then your circuit finals are held this year
in Harrisburg in January.
In January.
Yes, sir.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Harris, for sharing your time with us here on the Making Eight Rodeo Network. Thank you.
Good luck, sir.
All right, that was Doc Rodeo, none other than one of our newest affiliates down here at MakingARodeo.com, checking in up there at the Cowtown with the stock contractor, Grant Harris, who's pretty legendary. Am I right, Steve?
Yeah, he's just a really good guy, him and his wife, Betsy, really good people.
Well, listen, you know, we were actually just talking during the interview, and I mentioned to you that we were actually going to run smack out of time, and I don't even think we're going to have enough time to get all of the other interviews in. But what we're going to do is we're going to feature them on MakingEightRodeo.com. We're going to go ahead and put those interviews up so fans will be able to catch up with them later on this evening, and so fans can find out a little bit more about Cowtown and just, you know, how you've been able to catch up with these guys and really, you know, help us by spreading the word about these rodeos, which is our main focus here at MakingEightRodeo.com and the Making Eight Rodeo Network. So, Steve,
it was interesting, too. I had two bronc riders that are from the Stephenville, Texas area that are up here for the summer riding every week at Cowtown. So they were very eager to get interviewed because they wanted folks back home in Stephenville to hear them on the radio.
Yeah, and you know what? I think we could probably squeeze in one more, and that would probably be Casey Maddox, one of the contestants down there. Am
yep.
I right?
Oh, absolutely.
Well, let's take a listen to what you had to say with Casey when you're able to catch up with him.
Sure.
This is Doc Rodeo here with the Making 8 Rodeo Network, and I am here with...
Casey Maddox.
From...
Wichita Falls, Texas.
And you're right now at the Cowtown Rodeo in beautiful Woodstown, New Jersey.
Yes, sir.
So now you were up in the saddle bronc riding and the bull riding tonight. First, tell us about your saddle bronc horse.
Well, nobody around here really knew it. It's a new horse that Grant just got from Moorheads, you know, the Three Hills Rodeo. And I'd asked around, nobody seen it, and that, which is best because I went at it with a pure mind, you know, just jump for jump. And I didn't know no marks, so I just give her one over, and she's a nice little bronc one out there, and she bucked good, and hell, you know, I just fell off like old fat lady.
Now, too, you did, you placed in the bull riding tonight.
I did. I'd watch this bull go time or two, and we'd give him in the practice pens often. And sometimes I fight him, you know, for my buddies, and I've seen him go several times, and I've wanted to draw this bull. The only reason I entered the bull riding here was to get that bull.
So now, and your score tonight on the bull riding was?
I believe it was 72.
Uh-huh.
It was just a nice little white bull come around there to the right and the lash, not a whole lot of kick, you know, just pretty nice, tight little quick spin. Just did what I could and stayed up on my rope.
So now you're up here for the summer, knocking out a lot of these open rodeos, PRCA rodeos. I think I've seen you at Rawhide and Painted Pony with Sam Swearingen as well.
I have. I've been in the APRAs and the Painted Ponies and the PRCA. I just want to try a little different circuit, trying to get my name out there, get some points up on the
Now,
magazine.
Are you planning on going back to Texas in the fall?
No,
or?
No, not anytime soon. I was trying to try to meet some people out west and kind of mosey on out there. You know, once I left home, I didn't really want to go back until I was good and ready to, and I ain't near enough ready.
Well, congratulations on your ride tonight, and we'll see you down the road.
Yes,
take it easy.
Thank you.
This is Doc Rodeo for the Making 8 Rodeo Network.
Well, I've got to say, Steve, that was, man, it's really great to have you a part of us and being able to do more of this coverage of these rodeos, and we look forward to actually being able to do more actual rodeo wrap-ups as we were able to give our listening audience here tonight a little sneak peek of what we'll have to look forward to here the remainder and as you get out and cover a lot more of these events up in the Northeast.
Yeah, and I also will be doing some stuff out west. I'm booked for rodeos back home in Texas, Arkansas, Louisiana, Oklahoma, Colorado, California. And so anywhere I'm at, I'm more than happy to interview folks and get a report out to all of our fans on Making 8.
That's right. That's right. Well, I've got to say, we certainly are blessed to have you here as part of our team and proud to have you on board here on part of the Making 8 Rodeo Network. Now, one of the questions that came in, Steve, and this is something that maybe maybe something that could be put into consideration is, what about having your books put on a CD? So some of these cowboys traveling up and down the road that may not have enough time to sit back and read might be able to listen to it.
Well, let me see if I can't get myself into a studio and... Or actually, they might want to have someone that's a little better at reading the book than me. I don't know if they want it read by the author or not, but I can sure look into it.
Yeah, that would be something really interesting. Maybe getting an old cowboy or something. Hey, we could get Chad Nicholson to recite your book, or somebody like Bob Tallman. You know, that would be fantastic. I'd love it. But you know,
boy, I think what those guys charge by, they don't charge by the word. I think they charge by the syllable. I'd go broke quick because they're so good.
That is for sure. But listen. It is absolutely great, and we look forward to having your book out there. Now, we're also going to post links as they become available on where fans can go to get your book.
If we want, we could do it where they could even just contact Make a Date, and you can forward me the information, and we can
absolutely.
Even do it that way if you're comfortable with that.
You betcha. So if you fans are interested in the book, send us an inquiry. Send us an email at scott@makeanateradio.com. And we'll be happy to forward that over to Steve and get that information to you. And we'll get that book in your hands. I think any rodeo enthusiast, whether it be a fan or a contestant, anybody who's been a part of it should be a part and have an opportunity to read your book. So, Steve, thank you very much for joining us tonight.
Oh, thank you, Scott. I really do appreciate it.
You betcha, buddy. Anytime. And fans, I want to remind you guys to check out MakingEightRodeo.com. We've got a lot of events coming up. Cheyenne Frontier Days is opening up this weekend. We've got the CDR Finals that'll be up there in Cheyenne with the Cheyenne Frontier Days, and there are a lot more rodeo action coming your way. So you fans, stay tuned. Steve, we will definitely catch you on our rodeo wrap-up, the next rodeo we can get you on board with, man. And thanks for taking part. I can bring you one
from the Pocono Mountains this Saturday where I'm announcing.
We look forward to catching it, Steve.
All right, I'll see you down the rodeo road.
You betcha. Take care.
Take it easy.
All right. Friends, that was Steve Bacquet, and like I said, you know, if you haven't had an opportunity, go find him on Facebook. Make sure you guys get in contact with him and listen to this guy's story. Such an inspiration. So thanks, everybody, for tuning in to our extended version of our Back on the Ranch show here on a Monday night. We look forward to catching you down the rodeo trail. Make sure to stay tuned to MakingEightRodeo.com for all of your information.
Howdy folks, Scott here with the Making Eight Rodeo Network, inviting you to come down to MakingEightRodeo.com. For all of your bull riding and rodeo information, come check us out and get a grip. We've got weekly radio shows, live internet video streaming, and much, much more. Also home of Bucky the Bull. So don't miss out on an opportunity to sit back with other fans like yourself. Come check us out at MakingEightRodeo.com. Get a grip.
Wild horses and honky-tonking bars drive the man to chase gold buckles and guitars. I don't do it for the money, I can't blame the fame. It's been a long, hard ride, still I saddle up just the same. I'm rolling right along, sky above is blue. I got the winter rolled down and I'm listening to Chris LeDoux. Half a can of caffeine running through my veins. Riding rain or shine and I'm never pulling back the reins. Now you may not see me on your TV. I'm seldom heard on your radio. But if you're looking, you might just find me somewhere between the road and the rodeo.